Hello, 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 everyone. My name is Mallory, and I'm here to welcome you to a new episode of Mallory's Weird World Adventure. This is the podcast where we're going to show you this weird world of ours in a different way. And I am here today with my official new co-host, Michael Maldonado. I begrudgingly decided to add him officially as a co-host, not just, you know, a guest host, but like a co-host to the show after I married him 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
We eloped in Shenandoah National Park.
We did.
I just want to say, like, how unbelievably beautiful it was, and I will brag. I think we have the best wedding photos of anyone that I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
no
pretty
bias.
Great. No bias. We happened to hike up to Stony Man. Stony Man Trail to Stony Man. Is it Stony Man Point?
I don't know if it has, I mean, the summit. I don't know if it has its own name.
No, it is a summit. We hiked up Stony Man Summit.
They all have summits.
to this beautiful rock formation on the top of a cliff to take all of our wedding pictures. And they look pretty epic. If you go to my Instagram, either Mallory Mackey or Mallory's Adventures, it's on both of them. And I encourage you to check them out because they are beautiful. The wonderful Erica Gaskell did them and they are just perfect.
Yes.
They are. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. We're going to talk this week about Las Vegas and SciCon 2024.
So excited to be the official co-host. Just had to, finally my big break. All I had to do was marry you.
It's true.
Another win for nepotism.
Yeah. Do you want to give everybody a quick briefing on what SciCon is, since you're the person that's, you know, been in the skeptical movement for so long?
Since I recruited you to go.
Yes.
It was a birthday, kind of a birthday present.
Yeah, it was your birthday present, yeah. So SciCon is run by the Center for Inquiry, and they're associated with the Skeptical Inquirer, which I've written several articles for. So I've written a couple pieces for Skeptical Inquirer now, and Michael co-wrote one with me. So if you guys go to Barnes & Noble, any newsstands, anywhere that you normally get your, you know, magazines from early next year and look for the Skeptical Inquirer, you'll find my first piece on Robben Island and how people think it's haunted.
You just want to show off the penguins.
I did just want to show off my babies.
I know.
They're critically endangered now. I have to, like, spread their word.
Yeah, they got,
I know.
They got bumped.
They
up
got
or down?
Bumped. They got
you
bumped
down.
Down,
right? Yeah. It's...
There's less than 10,000 mating pairs in the world, I think. Okay. That's less than 20,000 penguins. So they're critically endangered. There's, like, sadly, these epic photos from the 1920s of scientists on Robben Island, and it's just like square for square, just penguins everywhere, just covered in penguins, and now, like, they're very scarce. I mean, they're almost gone. So it's very depressing. So I got to spread the penguin word, the South African penguins. And then we have a piece on the ideomotor effect coming out after that.
Yeah. The neuropsychology and neurophysiology of the ideomotor effect.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Ouija boards, dowsing rods.
Mm-hmm. Divination tools. It's very interesting, so we're going to have to, we'll tell you guys more about that when it comes out, but make sure you keep a close eye.
All the same delusion.
So I guess when speaking of paranormal delusions, Michael, would you like to talk about the skeptical movement and what it is? And, you know, SciCon.
Yeah, so SciCon is the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry Conference, and we went for my birthday, like you said, and I've been slowly nudging you along into the scientific skepticism movement. I don't know.
Movement.
Yeah. Groups, yeah. So, I mean, basically, the overall idea is just people that apply the scientific method, scientific reasoning, logic, rationality, evidence-based observations, logic, data to just the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you had mentioned the article that we co-wrote on the ideomotor effect. So the ideomotor effect is kind of the neuropsychological process that is responsible for things like the Ouija board. So kind of like how it appears to move on its own.
That's
all.
But it's really just you making
I mean, we don't need to go into the depth about that, but claims like that. So like all the paranormal stuff, you know, ghosts and Bigfoot and all. I mean, these are well-studied phenomenon. with, yes. you know, you can approach them actually scientifically. And obviously when you do, they are largely negative results.
Yes. Right? And if people want to get into it more, you should definitely check out the old show Bullshit by Penn and Teller.
Yeah, it's surprisingly good. It's like a surprisingly good demonstration of kind of scientific skepticism.
Yes.
They're a little, that show's a little more just like straight debunky.
Yes, and it's also very outdated now. Only in some episodes. Some episodes.
Yeah, it's from
early 2000s.
Early to mid 2000s. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's some stuff that they have admittedly like changed their mind on. Because, again, mm-hmm. the whole point is to come to the best conclusion based on the best available evidence.
That can change.
That's what science is. Mm-hmm. And that can change, right?
Yes.
And if you approach life with that kind of just policy, like, well, I, you know, believe X at this time based on the preponderance of evidence right now, mm-hmm. you like almost kind of can't lose, right? You're allowed to change your mind.
Yes.
It's process over result.
Yes.
Right? Respect the process. Mm-hmm. And then you're allowed to update your beliefs, right? Mm-hmm. I remember being in college and being like not pro climate change. Like, I just didn't like that Gore. Like,
I know.
I just didn't like that, like, a politician, it didn't have to be Gore. It could have been any politician, was, like, so, like, up in my face. I'm like, what does this guy know about science?
Shut up.
At that age, I just didn't like that it was, like, I don't know, a politician intruding on my science stuff, and I'm not going to listen to him anymore. But, you know, the overwhelming scientific consensus is for anthropomorphic climate change to be a real phenomenon that we are actively causing and is having horrible results. And I updated mm-hmm. my opinion. I mean, it's not an opinion, right? Like, I don't know anything about climate science myself.
Right.
I'm not capable of
not
running
Michael
this.
Michael Mann.
I'm not Michael Mann. We saw it. PsyCon.
We did.
So, you know, I defer to defer to the scientific community that has spent their lives specializing in that area.
And Penn and Teller actually had an episode against global warming, and they changed their mind on it too. But like that's one of the ones that they had changed their minds
it's 20 years old.
Right.
So
that's interesting. Anyways,
the show is very funny. They're great magicians. And yeah, I don't know. It's a good representation of that. They're very sarcastic, very snarky, you know, very, it was on Showtime, I think. So it's
scandalous.
There's some nudity involved. And plenty of cursing, that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's you know, kind of purposely in your face, debunky. Whereas, you know, a lot of scientific skepticism is more just, you know, it's just people discussing stuff through like Skeptical Inquirer.
You got
outlets.
Me in the Skeptical Inquirer too, because they do articles on the Winchester Mystery House.
Yeah, it's all the stuff you're into. It's they approach it from like a rigorous like scientific method approach. They're real scientists applying real scientific methodology to a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
And the world is weird. You don't need to make, like, you don't need, you know, I'll put out my, I don't know if it's a bias, my humbly objective opinion that things like ghosts, ESP, all the psychic stuff, I mean, that's just all nonsense. I mean, it's been studied ad nauseum. And I'm also a huge fantasy nerd, so don't get me wrong. I would love it if we had some, like, I don't know, heaven and hell Diablo-style, you know, angels and demons and ghosts. And I would love that to be a reality. But based on everything I've seen in my life and based on all the evidence I've been able to read in real scientific journals, investigations, there's just nothing to support any of those claims, right? It's usually just people being like, well, we don't understand X fully, therefore ghosts. No, 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 no. Just because a theory, like our knowledge of something is incomplete, does not mean you get to put in whatever that, you know, whatever X belief. If, you know, if you want it to be ghosts, it's ghosts. If you want it to be ESP, it's ESP. If you like aliens, it's aliens, right? It's just whatever the thing is, you just insert it. Now, you have to, if you're proposing a theory of ghosts, you have to do your best to show that that's not true, right? The scientific method tries to disprove its own claims, right? You have to prove the null hypothesis.
I will say, I'm going to get back more into my opinions. Yes, I know we're getting into the weeds here. Later. It's good, though. But I do want to bring up more about that later.
Yeah,
That's fair. Before, I guess, we fully dive into SciCon, which is, you know, the conference for skeptical scientists and people that are interested in skepticism, I want to talk about, so before we went to SciCon, we did this whole, you know, filming of Weird World, crazy interview adventure throughout California, down to the Queen Mary in Long Beach, and then, you know, over to Las Vegas. And on the way to Las Vegas, I have to say, we had to stop in Prim. So I'm a regular traveler from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. Regular, I'm just very familiar with that route.
You were, at least.
I was. and still doesn't negate the fact that I did it hundreds of times. Yeah. And we passed through Prim, and I, like millions of other people, am fascinated with Bonnie and Clyde. I read the autobiography, My Life with Bonnie and Clyde, from Blanche Caldwell Barra back, you know, a decade or so ago.
I will say, as somebody who never cared at all about Bonnie and Clyde, I cannot believe how many people are interested in this.
It's fascinating. And I was pulled in because of Blanche. She was Clyde Barra's brother, Buck, his wife. And her story is fascinating because she was like a pastor's daughter and, you know, she married Buck. And she got roped into everything when Bonnie and Clyde were already outlaws. And Buck kind of, you know, convinced her to meet them somewhere. Oh, we're just going to see my brother. It'll be fine. We'll bring him some groceries. And they were supposed to stay for a couple of hours. And then it turned into a couple of days. And she's, like, getting really anxious. And they're sending her out because she's the only person that's, like, not really noticeable. And then, of course, they find them. There winds up being a shootout. And then, like, you know, Buck shoots somebody and then just incriminated. And, you know, she just gets caught up in it and is not happy about it, right? So it's a very interesting story. And it's the only account out there that's like, you know, a memoir of someone that actually lived having gone through life with Bonnie and Clyde. It's very interesting. And so I thought that was fascinating. So every time I go through Prim, I have to stop in because they have the car that Bonnie and Clyde were killed in. And, you know, police like stood outside. I've talked about this before on the podcast, so we don't know to go into detail. And we're so afraid. I mean, the amount of rounds of bullets they shot into that car is just excessive. Like, they wanted them dead, right? So the car is just completely just shot up all over.
Yeah.
And what's, like, more disturbing about it is that after it happened, it wasn't their car. They stole it, right? And the person who owned the car couldn't get it back from the police because the police had confiscated it and, like, wouldn't give it back. So we had to, like, get a court order and go before a judge to get his car back because it was, like, evidence, right? And then he finally gets his car back, and then he sells it to, like, some showman for lots of money, and then it starts traveling around. They used to let people sit in the seats, like, after they had it reupholstered and take pictures. Now it's, like, behind glass in a casino in Prim. And so we have to stop in and see it every time I go through it. I don't know. It's just fascinating to me. I could stand there and stare at it for a little while. I did. So we went and saw it. And they also have the shirt that Clyde was killed in on display. And, you know, naturally, I'm like, well, we should get, you know, content for Weird World, the show. And we put a few reels about all this on TikTok.
Just previewing it.
And
neither of us are TikTok. I don't know. We're a little old for that.
We're not TikTok gurus. We're very new, so we're, like, behind. But all of the videos I posted about Bonnie and Clyde went viral.
I don't get it. I mean
the shirts
mildly interesting, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. Just a car with a bunch of bullets from two people.
It
is weird history.
I mean, I think it was, like, you know, kind of just what they stood for, and people either love them or hate them, and then they viciously get in fights about it on the video, which is probably why it continues to blow up.
It's a lot of debate.
Yes. So the shirt's almost at a million views. The car is, you know, at 620,000. There's another one, you know, at 51,000. And, I mean, it's shut up the followers, and now we have over 100,000 likes because of this. So it's been, like, very fun. I mean, we have grown our TikTok just, you know, over the course of, like, a month because of Bonnie and Clyde. So thank you, Bonnie and Clyde. if you guys want to follow and see the TikTok, it's just my name, at Mallory Mackey, M-A-L-O-R-I-E-M-A-C-K-E-Y. And Michael, you'll see Michael make some appearances on there because now we're doing some fun Christmas videos because we kind of got in on it. We're having a lot of fun making just nonsense on here. And if you've ever watched Rudolph.
It's not the movie you thought it was.
It's not. So that old stop motion, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You remember there's that bird that famously doesn't fly. And, you know, at the end, Santa comes and takes all the toys and the elves are dropping them into houses. And they give them umbrellas so they don't fall to their death, right? So they kind of float down into people's houses. And this elf picks up the bird that doesn't fly and kind of looks at the umbrella and then looks at the bird and is like, eh, it's a bird. It doesn't need it. And just throws it over the edge of the sleigh.
The bird dies.
The elf murders the bird in Rudolph. So if you haven't seen it, please go to my TikTok and check this out because that's also just horrifying.
Yeah.
I saw
that's
that.
Pretty funny.
I saw it a few years ago when I was watching. It's a tradition for me to watch Santa Claus is Coming to Town and Rudolph every Thanksgiving after we have dinner because I'm a freak.
You are a freak.
And we were watching it and I don't know, I just clicked a couple of years ago and I'm like, oh, the bird just died. And then once you unsee it, like once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah, it's just low-key murder.
Yeah.
A murder scene in Rudolph.
Yeah. It's horrible. So anyway, I just had to bring that up. So make sure you guys check out our TikTok and all of our Bonnie and Clyde videos and the Rudolph murder scene. Psy-Con.
Okay, yeah. So we drove through the Bonnie and Clyde murder scene and got to Psy-Con.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, we arrived at the perfect time, like in the lunchtime break on Friday.
Yeah, it started Thursday. We weren't able to get there at the very start. So we were part of the way in on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I guess for some background of like notable figures like that are associated with like the scientific skeptical movement. I mean, there are a lot of the famous, I guess, scientific communicators that you might have heard of. Like Neil deGrasse Tyson was the keynote for this conference.
Which was awesome.
Which is awesome. And he's just an incredible speaker. I mean, before our time, like one of like the, I don't know, founding fathers of kind of modern scientific skepticism would be like Carl Sagan, like the Cosmos, who was Neil deGrasse Tyson's direct mentor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's like a lineage there.
James Randi.
James Randi, a famous magician. He died a few years ago. Oh, I mean, who's some other ones?
Bill Nye was there last year.
Bill Nye's involved in the movement.
I would have loved to see Bill Nye.
Movement's the right word. He's involved in the
movement,
community.
I guess. Community.
It's a community more. It's not like a political movement.
No.
It's just a way of approaching the world.
Right.
It's just a mindset. It's science. Yeah, it's applying scientific reasoning to things. Yeah, Bill Nye. I mean, like Stephen Jay Gould was a famous scientist.
Richard Saunders.
Saunders.
Michael Mann was there this year. We're talking about climate change. Banachek.
Yeah, you went up on stage with him.
I gotta get into that.
Anyways, it's a lot of this. It overlaps heavily with just some of the, you know, best known science communicators. It's the same kind of stuff, right? If you ever saw the original Cosmos or Neil deGrasse Tyson's reboot of the Cosmos from, it was like 10 years ago, something like that. You know, it's that kind of like, well, this is how we know stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't just magically know it. There's a process to gaining knowledge as an individual and as, you know, humanity. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. And we get there the first day and we got there in time for the book signings, right? Because I think the first thing we did was like kind of get a seat and then we met Michael Mann.
It was, during the lunch break. So they're doing some of the book signings. So we got there like at the book signings.
And he was a very cool guy.
He was surprisingly cool. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know a whole lot about him, but
he was very like personable,
very personable
and talking to everyone. And oh, you guys are from Richmond. Well, I went to UVA. I know the area. I was in Charlottesville for a long time. And we mentioned the Explorers Club. He's like, oh, that's prestigious. Like,
ooh.
That was very, very cool. Very cool guy. And it's funny because Michael is just very familiar with this movement and, you know, has been on the outskirts, low-key involved. I mean, that's your viewpoint since, you know, 2008.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess my background is all science. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're, you know, musical theater and Ellen, all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I was very just, I knew I was always going to go into something science related since middle school. And it was just very much middle school to high school to college, doing biochem to med school to, you know, radiology residency to neuro. It was just, there was never a gap in just a lineage of science education and training. And it was, I guess, in college that I got into it. Like into the, found out that there was an actual like kind of community wrapped around this. And just read a lot of books. There's a lot of kind of famous science books that touch on this. Like a lot of Sagan's famous books are very skeptical. You know, like we have a very
skeptical.
Yeah. Demon Haunted World. That's like, that's almost like the original primer on the, you know, on the, that mindset. But all of his stuff comes off very, you know, this is like how we know stuff and it's not just made up. And, you know, you can apply scientific rationality to claims and see if they're real, right? Yeah.
I feel like we were very, like, dazed that first day. And we kind of, like, got in and we found good, like, we found our seats. And then we wound up having really good seats the whole time because Mike had just gotten the nice camera for his birthday. And I, you know, I knew the editor for Skeptical Inquirer, who, you know, was also, like, running the event because, you know, I've written for Skeptical Inquirer now. So, you know, he's like, oh, you guys can take pictures. So we made sure we got like, right up front and had great seats to take pictures. And we kind of got situated in and I think almost immediately started with your bro, Forrest.
Yeah.
Mike likes people named Forrest.
Is that true?
It is true.
Wow.
We met at several events. We were like, oh, my bro, Forrest.
I don't know what it is.
You like those forests.
I just, it's the thing. I'd never seen him talk before or any of his stuff before.
He was very funny.
Yeah.
Is Forrest Vlaki. He did a talk on how to talk to creationists about evolution. And he's funny. He's like a comedian. He makes TikTok videos.
Yeah, he's definitely like kind of our generation, maybe even younger.
Because he's on TikTok.
Yeah, and it was all about like YouTube, TikTok, using the social media type platforms to promote.
And like using
free
comedy
science.
To like, you know, spread the word.
I'm a big fan of using comedy to get points across.
It's good.
So I think it's a, you can use it in ways that like, I don't know, you wouldn't be able to talk about a topic otherwise.
It's
be,
humanizing.
Like, taboo to,
yeah. You know. It's humanizing.
Yeah.
And that was very interesting. There's a few, you know, interesting afternoon talks. And then we kind of like scouted out and got our seats for Neil deGrasse Tyson because we were like, man, we got to be up front to hear Neil deGrasse Tyson speak. And I think I really wanted to go over to Caesar's Palace because I like the forum shops and I wanted that pizza, which I never got. But there was so little time and we wanted to have good seats. So we just went down to like the food court at the Horseshoe, which used to be Bally's, by the way.
Yeah, we didn't know where the Horseshoe was supposed to be.
I'm like, anymore. I've never heard of the Horseshoe.
It's
I've been
the
there
Bally's
many times.
Rebrand.
Yeah,
okay.
The Bally's rebrand. So, yeah, that's that now. And we just went down there and I'll say I feel like we'll probably get more into this in another podcast episode, but I do like the fact that the Horseshoe is kind of like the weird hotel.
Yeah, it was unrelated to PsyCon, a whole bunch of weird things in the hotel that we made sure to to see while we were there. So, yeah, we can just talk about that at a different...
Yeah, it was very cool, but we'll talk about that in a different one. But so anyway, we go back up to hear Neil deGrasse Tyson speak, and man, that was exceptional.
Yeah, he's a truly great communicator.
Yes. And the thing that I liked about him, he didn't talk about, you know, physics or astrophysics at all. Mm-hmm. He talked about social issues because he was promoting a book that he like kind of re-edited and rebranded and added stuff to and re-released. And it was interesting because he presented things that I don't necessarily agree with. And he did it in a way that was so conversational and humanizing and non-jarring that it actually caused me to think about my beliefs and see things in a different way, which is hard. I mean, it's hard to speak to someone
very
like
hard
that.
To do that. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, and I think that's more his goal, is not to necessarily change your, change someone's belief, your belief, my belief, but like make you at least think about it. Like, why do you have it? I think most people just, I mean, you know, present company included, you form beliefs, you can't really even tell why. Like, you, if somebody asks, said, like, well, how did you arrive at that belief? you probably can't answer it, right? You just kind of do, and then it's your belief, and it's just like a part of, almost a part of your
identity.
And you never question it. And it's just, I mean, I do it too. Like, everyone does it. And it's like, you need to like look at your own beliefs and just kind of like question how you arrive. Maybe it is objectively correct, and maybe you examine it and you stay it, and you're just like, and you're even firmer, you know, firmer believing in it after you do that introspection. But you got to look at, you got to question it.
You had to hold a
mirror
to
yourself.
Up.
Yeah.
It is, I will say, we've been talking about this recently, actually. First of all, we're very much just a conglomeration of our like of rituals. Like, I think a lot of people develop these viewpoints and things because it's how they grew up, and it becomes very ritualistic. And then it's your comfort zone, so you don't want to step out of it. And at some point, if you live too much in it, it becomes like your identity. And if there is a viewpoint or a thought or something that is so personal to you, it becomes your identity. Mm-hmm. You feel personally attacked when someone doesn't agree with it, and it becomes very jarring and much more aggressive. It's like why politics is so dangerous right now. It's like very much a part of people's identity, and they feel attacked when you don't feel that way because it's like you're attacking their identity.
Right.
So I think that becomes a huge part of it. So how do you start a conversation with someone to have them change their beliefs when they feel like that's who they are?
It's a very hard thing to do.
Yes.
And he did it seamlessly.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on stage talking to the whole audience, but he feels like you're just talking to him, like over drinks at a bar.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's how it,
definitely,
how his whole, I don't even call it a lecture. I mean, it felt like he was just having a conversation.
And he made fun of himself, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's very self-deprecating.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's very funny.
I like it.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, he's a great speaker.
Yes.
We were right up front, too, yeah.
It was perfect. Like, the eye contact and everything. We got great pictures. It was exceptional. And we had just an overall fantastic day. And then we're both very driven, ambitious, like goal-oriented people. So we're having a good time. But then we go back to the hotel room that night. We're like, okay, we need to like regroup for tomorrow. And these are the things that we want to do. These are the things we want to accomplish. This is what we have to do.
It's all about fun over here.
It's all about fun over here. And, you know, I really wanted to meet Stephen Hupp, who is the, you know, editor for Skeptical Inquirer, because he's there like running the event. And
we're like looking for each other.
Right, we're looking for each other. Yes.
Ben, you've been talking.
Yes, we knew to look
while,
for each other. I missed him all Friday. So I was like, well, we have to meet him. Like, you know, we're working together now, you know, sometimes. So I need to meet him. And then, you know, so we knew to look for each other, but it had not worked out on Friday. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, I meet Stephen. You know, you wanted to get a picture with, you know, Stephen Novella.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the single entity, more than any other single entity that kind of got me fully involved, you know, in that community, would be The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, which is another wonderful podcast if you're looking for other podcasts. It's just kind of about general science information, news, but applying kind of a scientific, skeptical lens to just approaching the world. Anyways, it's great. It's three brothers, a friend, and they've brought on Cara Santa Maria like 10 years? It's been a while. So there are five of them that host it. It's very conversational. You know, they'll have some specific topics and then they just kind of, you know, discuss and talk. And anyways, I found that in college because I was looking for stuff to listen to kind of commuting back and forth from home, and I've been a fan ever since. So that was the thing. I was like, I have to see. They were taping a live episode of their podcast at the conference, and I was like, that is the number, that and Tyson are the two things I have to see. So
we were like, we need to be like in the front taking pictures for the Skeptic Guide to the Universe taping. You wanted a picture with Stephen Novella.
I know. My personal hero.
Yes. And we wanted to meet Stephen Hupp. And like, so we had this whole like, well, these are the things we want to accomplish today. And we like go into Saturday and like, it could not have gone more
perfect. No, it was
perfect.
Great. Yeah.
It was a fantastic day. Everything kind of seamlessly fell into place, and everything we had like planned for or wanted to do was accomplished. So it was, and more.
I guess we should also, we're also not morning people.
No.
So we might have not gotten to that first lecture too, and just kind of, I'm just going to slide into the audience here.
No, it was
late for class.
It was like 11 a.m. late for class. It wasn't even just, okay, we missed the 8 a.m. But like, I think it started at like 8:30, and I'm like, I love everybody there. That's great if you can do that. I can't get up at 8:30. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, be ready by 8:30. That was right, just so. We were ready by 11. Oh, no.
We're very driven, ambitious, glaring people, but I can't get my ass out of bed before noon.
And I wanted to, I got a book that I was actually very interested in reading, and I wanted to get it signed, and he was signing books. That was another part of the list.
So we had to be there by then.
Yeah, so we got in. I got my book signed. I was the first in line for it. This is also
the second trip to the kind of swag signed book area, because we went there the first day, and I was like, oh, I'll get a signed Neil deGrasse Tyson book and maybe another one for, a buddy of mine that likes him a lot for, the holidays. And, $200 later, I was like, I just bought.
He bought the whole store.
I bought a dozen signed books and some shirts and some coasters.
Some coasters for my office.
And I was like, it's fine. We're here once this year.
We're going to do all these things.
And then the next day we went back and was like, oh, I should probably get the rest of these books, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a few other t-shirts I want. And another few $100 later.
You went crazy.
Oh, no.
You went crazy. And it worked out because then you
We were even going to get it home. It was like that many. It was that many books.
Because we were flying back. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure your backpack was quite heavy on the way back.
It was quite heavy.
And we just happened to be around at the right time to get that picture with Stephen Novella, too. And he was very nice.
Yeah, we just kind of sideswiped him in the hallway.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I need this picture. I'm so sorry. I don't want to be one of those people, but
you're
cool. My personal hero.
It
was fine.
It was cool.
Yeah.
It was great. And then we, got our good seats, and we're so aggressive about we want to be fair. So we're just going to stay in this seat all day. And even in the dinner break, someone will go get dinner and someone else will stay here. So we're in the front row for the Skeptics Guide filming. Or it was an afternoon break, because I think they were four or something.
Yeah.
And then Banachek was at night.
Yeah.
And so, we got all the swag we wanted. We got everything signed we wanted. We met cool people. And I finally got to meet Steven, and he was just wonderful. And he's like, I want to introduce you to all these people. So then all of a sudden, he's introducing me to all these incredibly important, relevant people in this movement that I have no idea who they are. And Mike's like, oh, my gosh, that's so-and-so.
Well,
oh, my gosh, that's so-and-so.
First of all, he was introducing me to these people. I think I went to the bathroom quick, come back, and you're just gone. All the people are gone. I'm like, what the hell just happened? I wasn't gone very long. It was just 2 minutes down the hallway. And where were you?
I was conducting an interview with
my heroes.
Rob Palmer for Richard Saunders' podcast, right?
Yeah.
The Skeptic Zone podcast. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, you have a TV show. Let's go talk about it over here. And I'm like, oh, okay. We became part of the cool crowd. It was very exciting.
I was just the cameraman.
Everyone
the
liked
partner,
you.
The partner, accessory.
Cool. And he's like, I have been a part of this movement for well over a decade plus, and you just show up here and we're in the cool crowd? Like, what happened?
A decade? 20 years? 2005?
Oh, wow. Well,
just shy of two decades.
How my life works, right? You just got to roll with me.
That's why I married you.
That's what happens when you're with Glinda.
That was the big selling point.
Glinda?
That's how you locked it in. Put a ring on this finger.
Yeah. It was very amusing,
and you are Glinda.
I am Glinda. Oh no! So if you haven't seen Wicked, by the way, it is wonderful. I've been a very big fan of Wicked since it first aired on Broadway in 2003. And Idina Menzel is one of my musical theater heroes. Mm-hmm. She was Maureen in Rent, and I just loved her in Rent. And so I liked her before she was cool, because then she was Elphaba in Wicked, and then she was Elsa and Frozen. So all of a sudden she's like relevant, and I'm like, well, I liked her first.
Admittedly, this is a world I know nothing about.
I know. But Glinda was always like, well, Mallory's just going to play Glinda, right? Like, when I went through musical theater and everything, it's always like, well, that's the Mallory role, and it's true.
I do like that you self-identify as this, because she's kind of a villain. I had not seen the play. We just saw part one in theaters. I was like, your character's the bad guy.
She's naive, and it leads to the destruction of other people because she doesn't have any idea what she's doing.
Well, it's about right.
It's not good. I know.
It's about right.
No. And then she chooses her own ambition and refuses to go against society because she just can't do it, whereas Elphaba stands for her principles to go against society.
Where would you go?
I don't know. It's tough. It depends on the cause.
You don't say.
I know. But really, though.
Yeah,
I mean, that's really what it is,
I gotcha.
I don't know what I would have done, but I'm definitely the Glinda there. The la 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 la.
Belt it out.
We're gonna make you pop, you lure. It's my song. Anyway,
I remember you in high school.
Wow. Wow.
I've known you a long time.
Oh, you sure have. But I think this is a good, before we get into like the Banachek and the Skeptic's Guide filming and all that stuff, I will say it's a good point to, I guess, time to mention the fact that we're kind of, you know, getting surrounded by and spending a lot of time with and making connections and friends and having a great time with all of these people that are very important in that movement. And, you know, everybody's asking about my show and what I do. And it became a very kind of like jarring evaluation for me on myself, because I do believe in a lot of the strange nonsense things that you don't.
You don't have to call them nonsense. They can be your beliefs.
I think there's more out there than we know, whatever that means. I know it's a generic statement, but
I'll agree with that statement.
I know. But I will say that I studied anthropology, as you know, and specifically anthropology that focuses on belief systems. And in that world, everyone is very aggressive about, you know, you don't leave a footprint, you don't interfere, you allow people to believe whatever they want to believe, you respect their beliefs, you are an observer. And it very hard teaches you not to question other people's beliefs out of a respect.
Mm-hmm.
And the skeptic movement very much questions everything and does question everyone's beliefs and can sometimes be very aggressive about, well, people shouldn't believe this. This is harmful. And I agree that sometimes that's also true. So it's put me in an interesting sliding scale, because then I'm starting to ask the question of, well, when do beliefs become harmful and when do you say something?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a conversation I'm going to have on Rob Palmer's podcast, hopefully with you, in April. And I'm trying to develop my thoughts before then, so we don't need to like fully dive into that today.
No, it's a really tough, you know.
It's hard, and I'm actually going to have a conversation with Brian Dunning about it.
It's a tough thing
soon
to do. Yeah, I'll be honest. It's very hard to change people's minds.
Well, you're not going to.
You will occasionally, but but I don't know if that's even the right goal a lot of the time. I mean, what interested me in that approach to the world is I just think it's the most useful approach to the world. I mean, like, I'm interested in actually understanding what's happening, like the actual truth. And, you know, I think I've told you, I'd rather live in a bleak, horrible world of terribleness if it's real than, you know, was it red pill myself, right? Is that the one to go back to the Matrix?
Yeah.
I'd rather live in the reality, horrible, you know, reality from the Matrix movies than in the Matrix.
Right.
Because one's real and one's self-delusion, you know, is a delusion. But
it's a clear resonant of Barbie Land.
But
I haven't always
but
felt
I also,
that way.
I mean, there's plenty of very weird stuff. I'm all about the, like, weird places, weird history, weird lore, mythology. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge, huge fantasy nerd. I'm, you know, big mythology nerd. You can love all that stuff without, you know,
believing,
endorse. I don't know, like, endorse is not even the right word. I mean.
Right. It's hard because, you know, I'm making friends with all these people. And I have to, like, you know, walk this line of, well, I don't really want to be, I don't want to have an opinion yet. I want to be very neutral because that's what the journalist does. That's what the anthropologist does. And I'm kind of like trying to find my footing. But I did notice that, you know, a lot of people in the skeptical movement, and they're all my friends, I say this with love, are very, you know, harsh too on the other side. Like, you know, like if you're in the paranormal world, it's, you know, it's very harsh against the people that don't believe. And if you're in the skeptical world, it's very harsh against the people that do believe. And there needs to be like a bridge of reason, I feel like, sometimes in between.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is, you know, again, we talked about kind of, you form a belief either for some reason or another, right? I mean, maybe it's a very well thought out belief that you really arrived at after doing a lot of soul searching and, you know, digging and evidence, you know, data collection and coming to that, but probably not, right? I mean, it's just probably that's a minority of your beliefs. They're a minority of my beliefs, but they become a part
your identity.
Of you, and then you just defend them tooth and nail, like someone's attacking, right? And no one hears each other, and it's just a waste of time, like, you know, to approach it that way. Like, yes. I mean, you know, you just anger people, and everyone just ends up angry, nobody listens, and you get nowhere. Being able to evaluate your own beliefs and then discuss kind of, you know, the pros and cons or the evidence for and against. You should try to disprove your own theories.
I agree
example.
With that.
I mean, that's like that's like one of the tenets of science. Mm-hmm. Is you not? I don't know why people always kind of have the idea. You know, I say people that don't have like a rigorous scientific background, and think like, you know, like, well, scientists proved X. No, they are trying to disprove their own theory.
Yeah, that's true.
It's basically, you don't ever prove something is true. You can disprove a whole bunch of stuff, right? You you set up your experience to be disconfirmatory. Mm-hmm. So,
and the stronger your hypothesis is, the
if it keeps surviving all these tests, you kind of narrow it down to like, well, it survived all these tests. And, you know, at some point, again,
it's more like,
again, another thing that always just bothered me. I know we're getting a little into the weeds here, but like, people would be like, well, you know, it's just a theory. The word theory in science is kind of like the highest echelon of knowledge.
Very
like,
well established.
We have a theory of, you know, mechanical physics. And it's like, yeah, it's how the world works, right? Like, it's a theory of gravity, which means, yeah, we get it. Like, if you jump off the building, you're going all the way to the ground.
Unless you're the Wicked Witch.
Unless you're the Wicked Witch. You need to give that a test. Mm-hmm. You're the quote-unquote good witch, right?
Well, Glinda has a bubble. She doesn't fly. Floats in a bubble.
Anyways, I just think that approaching the world with a skeptical, I mean, also, why wouldn't you want to question things? You should question things. Yeah, I'm not arguing with you.
I love questioning things.
I mean, that's what it is. I mean, like that. It's not cynicism. Mm-hmm. I think people confuse, you know, skepticism gets kind of, you know, at least in common parlance, kind of confused with cynicism. It's not just naysaying. It's just saying, like, you know, oh, well, that's an interesting theory or hypothesis or thought, or, and how would we establish kind of the validity of that, you know?
Right.
And, you know, if people want to say like, well, you know, it's just ghosts or God or magic, and it's just outside of knowledge. Well, then you've just defined it out of being an interesting question to me. Like, if I can't evaluate it in any meaningful way based on the reality I'm living in my life, then what? Okay, you're welcome to believe it. It's just, it's not a question. You can't answer it.
Right.
It has no. You've defined it out of being a question, and it's just not interesting to me. And that's fine. You can have those beliefs. But if you're making a claim that is testable, you should test it.
Yes,
And if it doesn't rise above those tests, you should discard it and come up with a new theory of it. I am thankful that we don't know everything about a lot of things, because otherwise there would be no science. It'd be done. It would just be knowledge in a book, right? It would just be, here's how the universe works, the
There's
end.
There's a lot of we'll gaps get up. That have to be filled.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. There would be no careers in science if there were no gaps in knowledge.
That's
that is what is searching to fill in those gaps. And the more gaps you fill in, the more gaps that become apparent. You don't even know what you don't know until you kind of get to a level of understanding, not you as an individual, as a society, as a species. Mm-hmm. You know, we couldn't have come up with like, what is dark matter and dark energy without having a well-established understanding of kind of classical mechanics and, you know, general relativity, you know, Einstein's general and special relativity. Those things allowed us to then get to the next level of questions. Mm-hmm. So that there's probably almost an unlimited amount of question seeking. And that's, you don't need the other stuff, right? I mean, why replace it with something like, well, it's just ghosts, or it's just, you know, that's boring and lazy to me.
I want to say, though, too, a lot of people in the skeptical world would love to find out that there's ghosts and things like that. People are, they're not like naysaying it. They want it to sometimes be real, but they just don't think it's likely.
Because it's been looked at so many times. Right. I know you're just kind of sides. I know you're kind of, you don't love the alien conversation stuff.
I don't.
And I'm somewhat ambivalent to it. But I think it's maybe a more useful way to discuss like what we're talking about right now, because for ghost type stuff to be real, at least in a way that like it's interacting with, you know, you can pick it up on an, you know, whatever, made up little ghost detector. If you can find something that detects the energy, it's interacting with kind of our physics, right? Like mm-hmm. with our reality,
yes.
we have a very well fleshed out mm-hmm. like understanding of our day-to-day physical reality, right? There's not like a lot of unknown energies that we can pick up. We built the machine. We, you know, engineers right. understand how what it's picking up. If we can pick that up, we can study it.
Right.
We would have a well-established evidence showing these things at this point, right? People have spent a lot mm-hmm. of effort to show them, and they're just all negative. Mm-hmm. It's just not interesting. And then if you want to get into like, well, they don't interact, and you know, it's right. you can always move the goalpost and explain right. away that thing. But that's just not an interesting way of approaching
right.
life to me. Yeah. So anyways, I think the aliens is more interesting because like for ghosts to be real, quote unquote real, it would change our entire understanding of physics, right? It would upturn mm-hmm. all of what we know about right. just basic like mm-hmm. electromagnetic mm-hmm. energy sources, right? It would just change everything, which is extremely unlikely, right? You're mm-hmm. making a claim that would overturn hundreds of years of modern knowledge, thousands of years of the knowledge, you know, underlying kind of our modern scientific approach to the world. You better have some really, really strong evidence for it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no evidence for that. So the pre-test probability of that being true is so low as to me, I round to zero.
Mm-hmm.
I don't put zero or 100% on anything in theory because mm-hmm. you can never mm-hmm. get quite there. But to me, the pre-test before you've even done a test of something like ghosts being real is zero, you know,
right.
rounds to zero because of yes. how much it would require us to change our understanding of everything. And there's just aliens, on the other hand, I'll say I don't think there's green men visiting Earth. I don't think there's a big government conspiracies, you know, any of that. But alien life is well within our understanding of physics, right? There's
mm-hmm.
there's nothing about our understanding of physics and biology and chemistry that says there's not other life on other planets. In fact, I think it almost certainly is just based on the number of planets and now we're, you know, all the exoplanets we're finding, and there's certainly Earth-like planets and
mm-hmm.
them visiting here. I don't think it's likely. But anyways, it's more interesting because I think it is within the, you know,
mm-hmm.
the pre-test probability of alien life existing, I think is quite high.
Mm-hmm.
Visiting us is a different
right,
story.
Right,
but whereas ghosts would just require a complete rework of all of our understanding of, you know,
right.
modern knowledge. And modern knowledge gets you pretty far, right?
Mm-hmm.
We fly planes, we go to space. You have the world's knowledge on a little tiny electronic device in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Science works. Yes. You know, science delivers the goods. That's
yes.
that's why it's valuable.
Right. Right. Getting back.
Yeah, sorry.
To,
I know we keep going off on these.
Getting back to before we continue to that night too. I wanted to briefly say that one of our new friends in that world was Brian Dunning,
yes.
who does Skeptoid mm-hmm. podcast, and he's been prevalent in that world for a while. we were hanging out with him that last night, and you know, he was one of the few people that did kind of reach out and be like, well, you know, a lot of your stuff does, like, you know, show the paranormal, and like, you know, what do you think about that? And like, we started a conversation, and you know, he is of the belief where, you know, we talked about the anthropology, the respect versus, mm-hmm. you know, just there is, you know, there always question everything, don't allow.
It's a very fine line.
Very fine line. And he, you know, he has a very strong opinion that any non-realistic belief, you know, systems are harmful. So we're going, which is like, you know, obviously not exactly where I stand on it, but we're going to have a conversation for the podcast about that soon coming up where I'm
yeah.
going to just have to interview him about his idea on that and why, which I think will be interesting too.
So let him.
Yeah.
Give the nuance of his position. Everyone has, you know, kind of
exactly.
their own nuance position on this. It's
yes.
a bit somewhere on
the
that spectrum. Obviously, you can probably see where
mm-hmm.
mine is pretty far to one side. But
yeah.
No, I mean, I understand the challenge of walking that line. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think those places and, you know, like, I mean, what was it, like the mystery? Like the
Winchester House.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating
great.
History. It's a fascinating place to just It is very weird. I mean, your show's Weird World of Entrance. It's very appropriately named. It's a weird place with a weird history. It's fascinating. And yes. I don't think there's anything wrong with, exploring that fascination. I mean, I think if you start then saying, like, you know, it's all ghosts and then it proves. Then I think you get into a way harder area to defend.
Winchester House is clearly not all ghosts because there were a lot of practical reasons as to why things were built. A lot of really bizarrely unexplained reasons as to why things were built.
And to me, that's the more interesting. Yeah. To me personally, that's the more interesting, which is like, why is all this weird? Like, why do it this way? And you had answers to some of that, which is just, to me, fascinating.
Some of it is also just like a cultural shift.
Sure.
Like the number 13, I think there's a lot of 13s throughout Sarah Winchester's, like windows. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of elements of the number 13 are in her house. 13 used to be a lucky number. Before it was an unlucky number. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was just, I mean, that's just a shift in culture, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we'll put 13 because it's a lucky number. Yeah. You know, it was very commonly lucky until it just wasn't and society changed. So that's also a part of it. But that's another, you know, rant off of the main topic here, I guess. But we're going to have a fun talk with Brian Dunning about that scene, which will be good. And continuing back, we got to watch the live taping of the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast. And Mike was so happy.
I was very happy right up front. Yeah.
It was very cool. It was very fun to get to watch that.
Yeah, they're very conversational. I mean, they're also very conversational. There's a lot of, internal banter with the hosts, which I like, because they're either family or close friends, and it just comes through. I mean, it makes it way more interesting to listen to kind of, scientific news when they're kind of,
Were they the ones that did the Vlad Tepish, like, DNA thing, too, or is that something else?
They didn't do the study.
But no, but they talked
about
it.
Pulled it. Like, they talked about it in an episode, and I was like, I have to find it. And then I pulled up the, article that they were referencing, and
That's very cool.
Yeah. They're very good at, being in the know and the weird, interesting science topic. The important ones, but also just the weird, like, the Vlad Tepish weird ones. It's just weird to know that
he had hemolacria. Yeah. Or very likely,
There's good evidence to suggest that he may have had that,
which would make sense with the vampire lore. And
that's applying a skeptical lens, right? So some scientists are like, well, how could we explain these legends? And they studied it and they're like, this fits him having this condition. I mean, it doesn't prove it.
Right.
You'd have to be alive and, run tests, but it's decent evidence showing that he very well may have had this, and then that could very well be why there's all that kind of blood lore legends surrounding this real historical figure. That's way more interesting to me than just
fascinating. I think it's great.
It's great.
And then we went to dinner and came back, and we're also super up front again for Vanacek.
Well, Vanacek's. I'd never seen him live. I mean, I know of him. He was kind of a protege of James Randi.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you could give a little backstory on him, because a lot of people probably don't know who he is.
Well, you wrote an article about him.
I did.
So you might know more recent. I mean, I have a general knowledge of him.
Well, Project Alpha.
Yeah, when he was, he would have been like a teenager?
He was young, yes.
And I don't remember the institute. There was an actual like science lab, right, that was trying to study the quote-unquote paranormal and like ESP type stuff.
And him and there was another person, another kid.
Yeah, it's two famous modern Michael Edwards. They're both, I think, pretty well-known magicians, like adult magicians.
They were able to convince the government that psychics were real based off their mind games.
Right, Randi recruited them to like be a part of this study with other people. Mm-hmm. And they fully knew they were just plants, plants purposely try to trick these, legitimate scientists who think they're doing legitimate science. And they fully believed it. It went on for a while. It was like a shockingly long time that like this was studied. And they fully thought these kids had, telekinetic powers.
Well, it's easy to see why, because he starts performing, and think of a card. This is the card you picked. How do you know what card I picked? Like, not like a physical card, like in your mind, right? Like he can, and then people would write on a piece of paper just something about themselves, and he was able to say what they wrote. I mean, things that like, And, you know, there's no cameras. He's very, you know, he says, I'm tricking you and, you know, I am not magic. But, like, there are no cameras, so try to figure out what I'm doing.
Right. And yeah, he doesn't claim any, you know, some of them try to claim that they are. It's like, this is a trick.
Right.
But, you're not going to know how I'm doing
it. It's insane. Yeah. And then you know, someone, like, write down just something meaningful to you on a piece of paper. And then picks up a stranger in the audience and just, like, this is what your paper says.
Speaking of a stranger in the audience, who got picked?
He brought me on stage. Yeah, I felt so stupid. I was, first of all, I don't know, had I realized I'd be up on stage, I probably wouldn't have changed because I was, like, dressed all cute that morning. And then I, like, changed into our, like, we had our cool t-shirts and stuff.
What are you saying? That Psycon t-shirt I bought for you wasn't cute?
The t-shirt was great, but I just look, like, tired. My hair's not done anymore. Like, I did not prepare to be on stage. There was no Glinda up there. It was like this tired, haggard woman.
Bubble.
Her bubble. Yeah, I'm like, ugh. And he brings me up and he's like, well, normally I have children do this. And I guess
but
I look
like a kid.
But you're
the closest thing you could find
today. Yeah. So I come up and he had me bend forks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seems very appropriate for
oh,
you.
Does it?
So appropriate
oh,
for
does
you.
Does it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I did some spoon bending at the Monroe Institute, so he saw through to my soul and had me come up and magically bend forks. And it was weird.
It's crazy looking from, I mean, I was the front row.
I was holding
it
and it was crazy.
The thing was bending, yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. And I will say the ones that he had me like, feel two of them and then used other ones. So I'm sure there was like something about the other ones because, you know, it's like the distraction of, well, I touched those, but I didn't touch those, right? I'm sure the one that broke in half like already had like something sawed in, but it did feel like it did just in my hand. But I don't know. I mean, like he just had me rub one and it's just like curling.
What?
I'm like, what is happening? And man, I don't know. I just felt so derpy up there. So embarrassed.
Well, that was been embarrassed for you.
Wow.
No, of course not.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Getting up, you're the one getting all the notoriety with my people.
I know. And then he gave me a free book.
Signed book, yeah.
Yeah,
cool.
It was cool.
Yeah, we got it
about his secrets, which I'm excited to read. So.
Yeah, it was a cool little book.
So that was cool.
Got a nice picture with him. It was good.
Yeah. I got to be up on stage with
Banachek. Cool.
It was very exciting. And
I think that's gonna be in Skeptical Inquirer, right?
It
like
is.
Like an article about the whole thing with
yes.
you up
with
there.
With me up there, and I look so derpy in the picture. I wasn't going to say no, but that's a very derpy-looking picture.
I like it.
No.
It's good.
And then, but I mean, it was even, so we made friends with Coleman and Danielle, who's his wife, and Coleman is like an influencer in the skeptical world now, and he's creating and starting his YouTube. It's just now, I think, starting out. And he was a very nice guy, and he was introducing me to a lot of people too. And Steven introduced me to him, and his wife was called up on stage, and and they can even say like, obviously, I know that I didn't know Banachek, right? So like, I'm not a plant, and like, obviously, we know she's definitely not a plant, and they've never met, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was so weird because he called up a guy and her. And he's like, raise your hand if you think I'm touching you, and point to like where I'm touching. And, you know, he's touching the guy, and the guy's pointing to where he's touching. And then she's like pointing to the same spot on her body where he's touching the guy, but he's nowhere near her.
Yeah.
That was weird. I don't want to know how he did that. It was crazy.
They didn't either. No one did. Like,
and she was up there, and she's like, I have no idea how he did that. He was touching me. Like, I felt him touching me.
Yeah.
I mean, how does he do it? I want to know. I mean, I was blown away.
Well, it's why there's a lot of magicians kind of in this community.
Right.
Because, you know, it's obviously a very science, kind of critical thinking, logic, reason type community. But there's also this tie-in with specifically magicians because they just have such deep knowledge of how easy it is
to fool people. Right. I mean, that was
like you can't believe your own senses, you know, a lot of time, right? I mean, like your brain, you know, your senses are feeding information to your brain, which is producing, it's not a fake, but it's producing kind of an illusion to some degree, or an estimation maybe is a better word. It's not an illusion. Like, it's producing an estimation of what would be objective reality, right?
Right.
And you can trick it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do it. Again, this is a little tangential, but I don't know if you ever tried to find your blind spot, like in your eye.
Yeah.
But, you know, because of where your optic nerve attaches to the back of your eyeball, there's an actual couple millimeter spot
that's weird.
That you don't have vision of because there's no receptors, there's no light receptors, you know, the rods and cones, where that optic nerve actually attaches. So there's a tiny little area where you don't have vision. You don't notice it because your brain interpolates that information. It just assumes it based on, you know, what is before and after it.
Right.
And just puts an image, you know, puts what it thinks should be there. But if you, there's ways to test it. I mean, you just,
the easiest way. I can see it on this side.
Yeah, the easiest way is just like Google it, you know, YouTube it, and people will show you how to do it. But yeah, you just kind of slowly move your, you look straight ahead, slowly move a finger. What I was taught was the, use a pencil because the red eraser tip or the pink eraser tip is just a good, like, clear marker where, like, the thing's different color and then it just, anyways, you take something like your finger or a pencil and you just look straight ahead and you slowly move it from your peripheral vision to your more central mid vision. And there will be a spot kind of a little, like, kind of peripheral, but not super far peripheral, where it just disappears. And there's, like, a couple millimeters of space where, like, it's just, like, it is gone.
It feels funny.
It feels really weird. But it's an example of kind of, yeah, your senses are estimating reality. It's a very good estimation, but you can fool it. And magicians are great at knowing how to do that.
It was unreal. I mean, I mean, we were looking at each other, like, just mouths agape. Like, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
I think I said that several times.
Yeah, it makes you feel like a, a little kid, like, you know, like, looking around, like, what is
what
happening?
What is happening? Yeah. Oh, my God.
Magic is real.
I knew it.
And then, I wish it was.
I knew, me too. And you would be a sorcerer, right?
Oh, yeah.
A wizard. You'd be a wizard. Yeah, yeah. Definitely a wizard.
Definitely not. Like the evil variety. That's
definitely
all about power and accruing knowledge.
Definitely not.
Up for my own ends? No.
Right. Definitely not. And then after the show with Banachek, we wound up going out and getting drinks with, you know, Stephen Hupp and his wife and Coleman and Danielle and Brian Denning and a bunch of people that were very, you know, prevalent in that world, and it was just a very wonderful experience. Like, you know, we made new friends, and, you know, they're all just these people just so involved in that world, and it was very exciting.
They're all just very interesting, you know, because they're, like, people that are here on their own volition.
Yeah.
It's not for work, you know, it's just you're choosing to spend your time here, and you're choosing to, you know, be at science-y lectures, right? You know, like, but it's because they're just interesting people that have, like, interesting viewpoints, interesting walks of life that want to kind of investigate weird and unusual phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get to have drinks with some of your skeptical people. Skeptic's Guide to the Universe people, too.
Yeah.
That was good.
So Bob Novella.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Did I tell the elevator story or you hate me forever?
You can tell it.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
There's not really much of a story.
Oh, no, it was just good because, I don't know, this is just me, right? And I'm very alert and on it for these type of events. And, you know, I wanted him to have a good time because it was his birthday. And all of his SGU people, you know, the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe people, just happened to be getting on the elevator going down when he was about to go down and, like, get us lunch.
Yeah, the elevator situation was a little bottlenecky. There was, like, two elevators. We were on, like the 24th floor.
It was
way up there. And there were, like, two elevators that would get you out. So kind of lunch break or at the end of the sessions, you know.
Right.
A few hundred people are trying to all mass exit
the
24th floor.
And we stayed
and there was no stair. There was no. You had to take the elevator.
You had to take the elevator. So. And, like, you know, we kind of stayed around a bit. And I think I had gotten some, you know, lunch. And we came back up and we were hanging. You were going to go down and get me, like, a drink or something.
Yeah, we were all waiting.
Yeah, we were waiting. And all the people from the Skeptic's Guide, you know, kind of go and get on the elevator. And you're just kind of, like, farting around. And I'm like, oh, go, get on the elevator. And I, like, push him on the elevator with all his heroes.
I know. And I was just like,
like, no, go. Because he wasn't going to go. And, like, I don't even think he was ready to go on the stairs yet. But I'm like, oh, no, you're going to go on this elevator right now. Go. And just, like, push him on. Like, now's your chance, Michael.
I know. It's too starstruck. Stood there like a total idiot.
Because you got to be on the elevator.
I was on the elevator.
With your people.
That was my people.
Yeah, that was good.
They didn't know they were my people. But I knew.
You knew they were your people. I had that at the first Explorers Club gala that I went to with the Irwins. They were actually very nice.
That's good.
Because I was like also just farting around on my phone. Yeah. And I had a really nice conversation with like Robert specifically about like Robben Island. So like we had been talking and it was very cool. And I'm just like on my phone farting around and they're like, hey, are you going to get on? Come on. And then I'm just like pulled on the elevator and I'm just like, oh my God. It's just, it's Terry and Bindi and Robert Irwin and their bodyguard. Yeah. I'm like, oh, hi. Well, hello.
Well, hello.
This is nice.
Yeah, it's cool.
It was very cool. Yeah. Now yeah, you have an elevator story.
I have an elevator story.
Anyway, I think that's a it's a good place to end it. A little bit of humor there. But yes, it was a wonderful time. You know, unfortunately, PsyCon is not going to happen next year because they're doing another event.
Yeah, there's still going to be another
event.
There's like, you know, a whole bunch of branches of kind of this community. And they're doing, is it with Free Inquiry?
I don't remember.
Anyways, they're doing an event. It's just not PsyCon.
Yes, and then they're going to be back in 2026 on the East Coast.
On the East Coast. So.
Which is really exciting. So we'll be excited to hop on board there.
Yeah. Anyways, if you like weird thing, you know, weird places, weird phenomenon, investigations, and you like science and critical thinking, and you like combining the two, just check it out. Check out PsyCon. Check out Center for Inquiry.
Skeptical Inquirer. Make sure you go the first couple issues of next year to check out the Skeptical Inquirer wherever you newsstand at.
Yeah, because might see a name you recognize.
You might. Alrighty, that's all for this week, everyone. Thank you for agreeing to be my official co-host, Michael.
Well, I married you. I wasn't given an option. It's part of the agreement.
Part of the marriage agreement.
Yeah, it was a very strict marriage agreement.
Right. Alrighty, everybody, until next time, stay weird.